Hello and welcome to this week's instalment of Nucleus Investment Insights. For those expecting our chat with private equity specialist William Digby today, we've been given late notice of his need to be by his expecting wife in hospital, which is perfectly understandable. We wish them all, of course, the very best, and we look forward to getting back on the show when next available, when he next comes up for air, perhaps, in the coming months. So all the best to you, William. So instead, of course, today we're going to take a look, or yet another look, at Australia's favourite asset class, property. As you may be aware, we've done a recently released property affordability report or update entitled June 2021 Property Affordability. So we're going to do a review of that today and then work through some solutions to the classic should I rent or buy decision that so many of us have had to make in their life. So joining me today is the author of that update and, of course, Nucleus Wealth's Head of Investments, Damien Klassen. Hello to you, Damien.
Hi, Tim.
And just, for those who may be watching in live at the moment, we've had to don the masks, of course, given the recent state government legislation or rules that have come in place. And, of course, we hope that future shows won't be in this way. But anyway, a quick reminder before we get started that if you haven't already, subscribe and click on the notification bell to be notified of when you go live or when we go live or have a new webinar to watch. And follow us, of course, on your preferred podcast platform. And we also ask if you'd like to take a moment to click like on the video now to help our show grow. And of course, for those listening in live, already got some comments coming in. Thanks to you, Cole, for that early one. Feel free to drop in your questions and comments in the YouTube live stream chat to have them answered along the way. So what we'll do is jump into our agenda for today. So we're going to be having a look at housing market valuations. We'll then be zooming across to the latest stats. And a lot of those, of course, have come from Damien's report out recently. Then looking at the macro outlook for Australian property, having a look at the calculator that we've put together, which will help solve some of these rent or buy questions that we're posing today as well. And then, as always, wrapping up with the investment implications and how these themes may affect the portfolios here at Nucleus Wealth. So with no further ado, let's jump across into our housing market valuations. Or perhaps just kicking off with maybe a bit of a synopsis of your report, Damien.
I'll probably start from some of the top down factors, because what I wanted to do was really sort of drive this along the lines of saying there's some big overall factors that are going to affect housing, and most of those play out in the long term, and then we're all sort of we're in this series of short terms though, and so it's about saying, well, let's have a look at some of these factors. What are the limiting factors? So, for example, your price to the price of the house compared to the average wage is sort of one of those factors that a lot of people sort of look at and sort of suggest that, you know, it's too high, people can't afford to buy houses, and the ratio just keeps going up and up and up and up. And this question about saying, well, is there a limiting factor to any of these, and what are those limiting factors?
Yep. Okay.
And so we'll move on to those in a minute, but as we sort of start to look at our sort of framework. But I wanted to sort of look first at some of the framework of the housing prices, some of these housing drivers. Now, and I've got a few different time frames. So we had this boom from 2012 to 2017, where everything was green. You know, credit availability was like booming. We had the interest rates were either low or falling. We had employment was increasing. Population was growing strongly. Foreign buyers were basically given
carte blanche.
Yeah, carte blanche. No, it was sort of a reasonable amount, you'd even call it, of looking the other way in terms of transactions that at one stage there, the federal government was looking to start cracking down on foreign transactions. And then that was sort of in the Hockey Abbott part. And then it changed and it was just like, right, we're looking the other way. There was quite strict rules in place, but I think they had a team of, you know, half a dozen people or something, and they prosecuted like three or four houses a year type thing.
Yep.
So the population growth, foreign buyers, tax incentives have always been strong in Australia, but, you know, there's certainly no sort of rewind on any of that.
Yep.
Money laundering is one of those factors that, you know, the Australian housing market is when they go through the the reports about where which asset classes are some of the most frequently used by money launderers, and, and Australian housing is one of those, because for 20-odd years, we've been talking about putting on these anti-money laundering factors. So basically since 9/11, 20 years ago, it was, you know, they've been talking about putting on these factors onto the housing market. And every year there's an excuse about why we just need to look a little bit more into the detail, or there's something else that needs to be done. So, so it is quite easy, you know, and it's a factor that's sort of been driving there. Then you got the restrictive planning, and then there's under and oversupply. So, and an undersupply, I guess, general undersupply. We went into this period of a bust in 2018, where the Royal Commission was actually looking into banks and coming out and talking about what was going to happen there.
Yep.
And the key thing there was really the credit availability. So that was the, most of the other factors were sort of neutral, or you know, foreign buyers were probably slightly down a bit, but but really it was the credit availability that saw that slump. And then you saw the reverse of that. So the credit came back on, and we didn't have as many of those problems. Post COVID, we've actually seen a massive jump in the credit availability.
Mm-hmm.
We've also seen this huge benefit in terms of the price of credit.
Yep.
So that's both
falling interest rates.
Yep. Yeah, that's come down. On the flip side, population growth has
gone to zero.
Yeah. So so that's one of the factors that you sort of ordinarily would have said that was a population growth going to zero, you'd be expecting falling house prices, but that price of credit and the availability of credit has just swamped any of the sort of more traditional demand factors.
Yep.
The other thing, foreign buyers, basically can't get to the country, and certainly in the case of China, the appetite for Chinese investors now is significantly diminished, and a lot of government intervention in terms of looking to make sure that
capital controls, those sort of things.
Capital controls to get money within China, and there's also an implicit bias as well towards Australia, which I think you'll find that spoken or unspoken, there's certainly if for the ones for where there are capital controls, I think it's more likely to be allowed to be go to other countries rather than Australia, given the trade tensions and other factors that are happening between Australia and China at the moment.
Yep, sure.
$5,000 a month if I buy this house and take a mortgage out. There's got a few technical problems. So I might just jump back to that housing. So mortgage payments to rent. So what we're very much looking at there, Sydney housing market starts at 100%.
Yep.
So you're paying the same amount on a mortgage as rent, and that's the bottom of it.
Okay.
And you top out at 200% when you're paying twice as much. It varies then. Different markets change, and you see quite different ratios.
Different high and lows sort of thing.
Yeah, different highs and lows and all that.
So you got there. So Sydney's at 150.
Yeah, currently at 150. So basically sitting pretty much middle of the band
where
it sort of traditionally would trade.
Yep. And Melbourne's at 137. But does it have the same band?
No, very different band. We'll look at that. In a little bit.
Sure.
So that's one side. So saying, and it's the thought that if people are genuinely looking, going, it will cost me $5,000 a month if I buy this house.
Yep.
But I can rent the same house for $2,500. Well, actually, people will still do it.
Yep.
But the equation's much more to that. Whereas it's $5,000 to rent it and $5,000 for a mortgage, you find it's
you'll start moving over. Yep. Okay.
The other part's the wages part. Is then saying, well, if the average wage is $80,000, then people can obviously afford a certain amount of mortgage. And if the average wage is $120,000, then they can afford a much, much bigger mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so looking at those two as very much being our key limiting factors in terms of saying that, well, that's going to constrain where it's going to go. Because what you find is that rent growth is actually pretty stable.
Mm.
That
makes sense though, because it's basically attached to wage growth, isn't it, really? Like, isn't that the sort of, you can't, wages need to go up in order for rents to go up, typically speaking.
Yeah. You think in the aggregate. So you say, well, if
you've got stagnant wages, you've probably got stagnant rent growth.
Exactly. And at a certain stage, you're going, well, investors might want to say, oh, yeah, I can jump in and I can I'll jump in and I'll buy this house and I'll rent it out to somebody. But if you're trying to rent it out of the fee that's just people can't afford,
yep.
Well, it's not that...
You've got to meet the market, basically.
Yeah. They'll just move into with other people and you'll get... And that's the big factor that in the Australian market you need to remember, well, all housing markets, is that the number of new houses built every year and the supply is such a small part compared to the actual aggregate stock.
Yep.
If you've got 10 million households out there, and they decide that there's going to be 3.1 people living per house rather than three.
Yep.
That makes a huge difference to the actual demand.
Number of houses.
Just all of a sudden, there's just all you know, there's years worth of demand you don't need.
Yep.
And so it's just a very small change back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then as people's wages get higher, you know, people want a second home or they want spare rooms and two studies or whatever it is. And so those factors are what I sort of. Yeah, very much concentrate on.
Okay. Yep.
No worries. The property price to wages, I do run as well because that I do think that makes a bit of a difference in terms of just being able to pay, put a deposit down.
Yep.
And also the part about, most people would like to pay off the house, but I think that's a much less of a limiting factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one, the rental yield, which is affecting more the investment side, but. So there's two parts to that. One is the absolute rental yield. How much are I actually getting for it?
Mm-hmm.
And that at the moment is at record lows.
Right.
The other part, the relative, which is, well, how much is it? How much can I get as a yield versus how much am I paying on a mortgage? That's actually at record highs.
Okay.
So, an extraordinary divergence. But so it's sort of basically saying that, as an absolute investment, for an investor's perspective, housing's never been more expensive. But if you're in it for the gearing and the leverage, then it's almost never been cheaper.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, the one equals the other.
Keeping in mind the risks.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's the broad sense of it. So if we can flick to the next one. So these are the stats we've got on at the moment. So you can see, as you spoke, Sydney 137. So Sydney, Melbourne houses, they are starting to look a bit expensive. You go through some of these other ones and you can see that, units in Brisbane, 82% is mortgage versus rent. So it's still cheaper to buy there than rent.
Yep, sure.
On a and this is on a gross basis. So keep in mind as well, this doesn't include your
stamp duty and
your strata fees and all that type of stuff.
Yep.
So
on costs. Yep.
Yeah, there's some other, and all your maintenance costs.
Yep.
So
what would just quickly though, just for those that are sort of looking in and having a look at these, like what would be just a rough percentage do you think that you'd need to gross up by? In order to do that, so obviously units are going to be different to houses due to strata and other sort of management costs. But would you say you need to gross up by 5% to allow for house? And obviously you've done a lot of work with the calculator.
Mortgage to rent.
Yeah, mortgage to rent. Yeah.
No,
it wouldn't be
that.
Yeah, more. Okay.
Yeah, more than that. Yep. Let's go into the calculator where we can see there's the stuff.
Answer that one a bit later.
I think that'll answer that question where you can actually see, and what we're trying to do is give people that opportunity to say, okay, I want to see what this looks like and what does it actually mean for me as an investment versus renting. Yeah. The other part then is, the next part then is that mortgage to full-time wages.
Yep.
And so that's the same type of thing where we're saying, it tends to tap out. I mean, Sydney's quite different in that that's sort of sitting at 65% now, so which is quite high historically.
Mm.
And
that's on a single full-time wage.
Okay,
yep. Sure.
And this is a pre-tax wage though as well.
Yeah,
there's a few things there. You're basically saying, well, take out the median house in Sydney,
yep.
Looking at the median wage of somebody in New South Wales, which is effectively somebody in Sydney.
Yep, that's right.
Because of the population.
Size of the population.
Density.
Yep.
Then you need 65% of the pre-tax salary.
So it's basically almost almost a full wage.
Yeah.
If you drop it back by tax. Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and once you take into account all the other costs that we haven't sort of put onto this, it would absolutely be the cost of a full, like one full-time worker would get you a house.
Yep.
And you need somebody else then.
And that's with the 80%.
That's an 80%.
80% LVR. Yep, cool. Yeah. All right. No worries.
So... that's where those are. We've got some of those other stats, but the next chart's probably the interesting one because this is showing the 3 month changes and what's been happening to these. So they're all getting worse and a lot worse. Well, not all of them, sorry, but most of them. Perth's looking not too bad. You can go through some of the units.
So well, Perth's off a low base of 5 years of
and they've had price plateaus. I guess they've had some good rent growth as well. That's sort of that helping that.
Mining moves back on over there.
But yeah, your Melbourne units have sort of got a little bit slightly cheaper on a couple of measures, but everything else is getting worse. And in particular, the housing markets are getting much more expensive.
Yep. Okay.
So so that's all there. I'll jump then to the next one, which is sort of showing what I've done on this one is I've shown it as a proportion of where this is a percentile. It's percentile ranges as to where it's been. So basically, what I'm saying is, if it's traded between 100% and 200%, then I'm going to call the 1% is when it's trading at 100,
yep,
and the 100% is when it's trading at 200. So close to 100 means expensive versus its whole history of about I think it's about 40, 50 years worth of history in this, and then so you can very much see that those property prices versus a full-time wage, they're as expensive as they've ever been in all the housing markets except Perth. Slightly cheaper in some of the units, but they're expensive. So paying off a home or getting a deposit is very expensive. Sydney and Melbourne houses are both sort of ticked over from. So basically, what happened was as mortgage rates decreased, they sort of fell back to an average level. But now what we've seen is a very slight tick up in mortgage rates, but a big change in prices.
Yep.
And rents have been either weak or negative in most of these markets,
yep.
Which has meant that, that they're starting to look a lot more expensive. And in particularly, worse than full-time wage. And then those last two columns just showing that real divergence that I spoke about, your net rental yield less your interest rate versus your gross rental yield is as divergent as it's ever been. So Melbourne houses, at its 100th percentile, so on one, and at its first percentile on the other.
Yep. Okay.
So,
all right, very good. Just a note there too for anyone that's tuning in to drop in any questions. I think we need the questions refreshed as well. Oh, okay. No worries. Yep. Cool.
So the next step is looking at the some of these big macro stats about saying, okay, well, if we're going to need wage growth, what are wages growing at, and what are interest rates doing? So the next slide, we've got some of these big picture ones. So we've got the interest rates on that first one. So you can see they've sort of come down to 2.2% at the moment. The inflation is one big factor. So in these, I've sort of run everything sort of ex inflation because inflation's one of these, especially if you're looking to borrow money, you want inflation.
Yep. Okay.
So if you can borrow $100,000 today and you get 10% inflation, then next year you're it's only worth $90,000 in those dollars. So
that's right. The brilliant part of being able to inflate away the fixed debt amount, but exactly. Then also hoping that you get the wage increases that
That's right.
Stop eating into your pricing power.
Yeah. So assuming that the inflation is also covered by wage increases and everything else is sort of going up, then often it'll be captured in also in rental growth as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be looking at something where if you can invest with debt during a period of high inflation, then
'80s and '90s in Australia.
Yeah, it's going to be helpful.
Yeah, sure.
The flip side is if it's a period of low inflation, that's where you're sort of going, okay, well, now you need to be worried about having debt.
Yep.
And particularly, it makes a lot of the maths all of a sudden mean that you've got to get everything exactly right.
Yep. And that's pretty much where we find ourselves today.
Yeah, so inflation's basically as low as it's ever been, and certainly for the last 10 years, it's been particularly low. If you jump to the next slide as well, we can see wages growth. So what I've done here is real wages and real rent growth. So that's basically once you take out the effect of inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both as low as they've ever been as well. So your nominal rent growth, look, you probably will see some net rent growth, but you certainly wouldn't be some of those periods we had before in the 90s, 80s, 90s, there, where you could see where you sort of had 10% nominal rent growth every year.
Rent growth, yeah, and yeah, wage growth. Yeah.
And wage growth, yeah. That's your perfect time for buying houses.
Mm.
It's less attractive when you're sort of doing it at current levels. And so it is this question about saying, if you're doing this as an investment decision about saying, well, I'm thinking that, I'm buying this as part of an investment, and I think that wages are going to be really low and rent's going to be really low. Then you need to factor in that, you know, you're not going to see the same house price growth that you saw in periods where we had those big nominal amounts.
It's quite interesting, actually, just on that top chart there, the real wage growth appears to be quite cyclical, you know, in the sort of 80s and 90s and sort of, you know, up until about, well, you know, the start of the millennia.
Yeah, and that's actually a three-year average as well. So right. There's some even sharper peaks and troughs.
Yeah,
fascinating
how cyclical it is. I wonder what the drivers were behind.
Very much. So a lot of it was around...
Liberal union, unions.
There's a typical boom bust in terms of your recessions. But yep. You also had that factor of unionization was quite high, and so wage growth was quite high.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a little bit of that. That was basically a lot of the benefits around the developed world was getting on top of wage inflation, was that then you managed to stabilize your prices significantly across these.
Yep.
And there's been a few studies out now just looking at that, and because it was always claimed that the... you know, it was all about the Fed stepping in and Volcker, you know, happy to send their economy into recession and raising interest rates that sort of really put the stamp on inflation.
Yep.
But there's a number of academics out there sort of challenging that and saying, well, actually, no, it was the deunionization. And
yep.
And if you look at the...
remove
all the power away from workers.
Yeah, the pricing power of labour. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Then you can control inflation. And so, you know, it's a reasonable argument that if you want to see inflation, I do think the argument's there that if you want to see inflation, you need to see wage growth, certainly sustain inflation. It's difficult to sort of reconcile the two at the moment.
Okay.
So we're really not getting that.
Got a couple of questions here, but we'll keep going. And there's just one around land tax and stamp duty, but we might find another spot. Unless you want to cover off on that one now. I can get the question. It's from Cole. Thank you. Do you think waiting for stamp duty to transition to land tax is a sensible idea? Might be waiting a long time, Carl.
Yeah, well, if you're in New South Wales, you don't have to wait.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So it depends on where you are. it's a tough one. I mean, I think the way New South Wales is doing it, you've got a choice between what you're going to do, and so I guess it's they're trying to make the two alternatives relatively similar. I think they're probably trying to make it slightly better for people to switch to an ongoing land tax.
Yep.
But that obviously does change the calculation significantly. I mean, your biggest upfront cost for all these is usually stamp duty.
Absolutely. And a lot of the time it's capitalized into the loan and you're paying it off over 30 years.
Yeah.
So you actually pay double.
That's right. So what you see from our calculator very much is that almost always, unless you've got really strong house price growth, your value will drop on day one. So you buy yourself a house for $1 million. You've actually only bought a $900,000 or $930,000 house, and you've shelled out $70,000 in
stamp duty.
In stamp duty.
Yep.
And so you are buying. You're literally buying 93 cents every dollar you're spending.
Point.
You're only getting 93 cents, but you're relying on the fact that, okay, I've geared it and I've got this growth and I'll get that money back over the time.
Yep, sure.
So, and that's what you see very much from our calculator is the longer you're planning on owning a house versus renting, the better it comes out. If you're sort of saying, well, I'm thinking about buying this house for the next 5 years, and then I'm probably going to need something bigger or do whatever, then okay, you've got to get enough growth in the next 5 years to amortize the cost of that. It might be $50,000 in stamp duty or $70,000 in stamp duty, which is a big hit to $10,000 a year, it could be.
Yep.
Whereas if you're going, okay, I'm doing this over 10 years or 20 years, okay, now it's back to $2,500, $3,000 a year, and it makes a
pretty easy to see what could happen.
So, yep. So you want certainty, I suppose, I guess is the answer for these.
Yep, sure.
So I've got a few of these ones up now, just a couple of specific markets now to look at. So the best and the worst, or the most expensive, I suppose, versus the least expensive. So you can see that I'm using the same measures for these. So mortgage payments to mortgage to the medium wages,
mm-hmm.
and the interest rates are the same across both. And the median wages are, you know, they vary a little bit state to state, but they're not significantly different in terms of the growth rates. So most of the difference you can see is in terms of other movements within that, price movements and affordability issues.
Okay.
So the Sydney houses have just rocketed up in the last bit. You can see they actually reached quite a low level versus where they've been on a mortgage to the median wages, and then jumping up to 65 versus rent sort of reached 30% maybe. Maybe not quite, and then before jumping up again, and that last one, that property price to median wages, is just really never.
Yeah, look at that go.
Never come down. It's just just keeps getting higher and higher and higher. So, and that's very much comes down to interest rates. So that's where we get to this calculator, because what I'm really trying to show within this calculator is if we actually head into this boom part. Do you want to bring up?
I'll get the calculator up on the screen.
If we actually have a boom, then the issue is rising interest rates are quite likely going to kill most of these ratios.
Yep.
So you've got to get quite a specific type of boom to actually really drive house prices higher.
Mm.
We had this boom over the 90s and 2000s where a lot of it was sort of fundamentally driven. The longer you got into the 2000s, the more it became a financial boom in terms of interest rates falling, really driving that factors. Most of the
so it's just credit, basically.
Yeah.
They're just a massive credit tap opening. Yep.
The fundamental factors in terms of rent growth and wage growth that you saw sort of supporting that market started to disappear, and it just got to the more and more financialization and just lower and lower interest rates.
Yep, sure.
So now it's a question of saying, can we get even lower interest rates? And yeah, we probably can.
Mm-hmm.
But then you need a sort of a very specific type of bust. And it's quite similar to the one we've got at the moment where you've had all these, you've got ultra low interest rates. You've got a lot of government support for populations and for housing markets as well.
Yeah, yep. And housing markets.
And so that's what's sort of managed to sort of give this extra push along.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, well, what's coming forward from here? Can you have another similar one?
Yeah.
And absolutely. We could see, more government support, more central bank, pushing interest rates even lower. They could go to negative interest rates. Mm. They have that in Europe.
Yep.
So you could probably knock another, percent to a percent and a half off the Aussie mortgage rate if the central bank really wanted to.
Wow. Right. Down into the single digit,
below 1%.
Yeah, below 1%.
They can absolutely get it below 1%. Most, Japan's got it there. A lot of Europe's got it there. It's exceedingly possible for central banks if they want to.
Mm.
So I wouldn't think of where interest rates are, even though we've been at zero for a while. I wouldn't think that as being a lower bound. If the economy does get in trouble, they can push it further.
Yep.
And so it's really a bet on, as with almost all assets at the moment, you're taking this bet on governments to say, will governments effectively bail me out?
Yeah.
I can make an investment decision. The numbers might not stack up, but
will they allow falling house prices?
The big factor is that interest rates, and will they try and keep pushing that down? So
okay, and actually, that just sort of maybe just leads into a question here from Regis: is housing in a bubble, or is it just very expensive? on the factors that you've said, though, they're all things that can be taken away, which would lead it to bubble territory, wouldn't it?
Yeah, look, I guess where I'd get to with that question is saying, if you think almost all assets are in a bubble,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a fair assessment in terms of, we've got record valuations in equities, we've got record valuations in bonds, we've got record valuations in houses,
yep.
Then, you sort of say, yes, housing's in a bubble.
Can the bubble be popped?
Can the bubble be popped? Yep. And that's the question. Well, and I think we've got central banks and governments fighting as hard as they can to try and make sure that bubble doesn't get popped.
Yep. Kevlar coating a bubble.
Yeah, and so now it's really a question, though, about saying, I guess that the big difference between, say, a housing investment and an investment in stocks is that in stocks, I could conceivably see in a good year, and we've seen it in the last year, that earnings were upgraded by 15-20%. Things happen, economic growth is strong, wages get held down low.
The fundamentals get supported to support the valuations.
Yeah, and then the valuation suddenly doesn't look as expensive.
Yep.
In house, that's not the case.
Yep.
It's exceedingly unlikely you're going to see a 20% increase in rents next year that will support the values of all these houses.
Yeah, which is that sort of typically the only fundamental driver in property? I'm just thinking back to my time in advice where I've been, you know, speaking to clients who've sold a property and they're looking to invest it, and that's why they've come to me, right? And they turn it and you say, oh, you know, how'd you go? I sold this house for $1 million. And you go, oh, that's terrific. And they go, yeah, we would never have paid that for that property. So their fundamental belief of what what houses are worth is, it's so much more subjective, I guess, isn't it, in property than it is in stocks and bonds where there's like a mathematical basis for the fundamental.
Which is why for me, I just need to keep tying it back to, It's things around, it's the cost of a mortgage versus the cost of a rent, because that is the real cost that people pay.
Yep.
And as you said, people, yes, I wouldn't have paid $1 million for it, but you're like, well, yeah, but if you could rent that house for half the cost if you could buy that house for half the mortgage cost of renting it,
yep,
you know, would you pay $1 million for it? And they're like, well, I have to live somewhere.
Yeah.
And so if I was going to pay double that in rent anyway, I suppose I would buy it.
Yep.
It's that point where, we're trapped in this part where when everything's expensive and it's being supported, it's the question is how long and how much, how long the government's prepared to support all asset markets.
Yep.
And then, you know, and that sort of gives you that feel back to the housing.
Yep, sure.
The question about the upside, though, is the other part, is that when interest rates have sort of fallen this far, how much upside have you got left by trying to...
How close to the sun can you go?
Yeah, exactly. And the other big problem with the housing market is it is a lot more like... an infinite amount, but thousands of times more illiquid than the stock market or bonds markets.
Absolutely.
With the view that if you're basically taking the view that this is all government driven, and so I need to be, my number one factor is assessing how committed are governments to holding asset prices where they are and holding interest rates where they are or pushing them lower.
Yep.
Then if that's your reason for investing in property, then you also need quite a longer-term view on that, because if they change, it's not something you can just suddenly go, you know what, new government just got voted in, something's happened, I'll flip back tomorrow and I'll dump it in cash.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you could be months before.
And everyone else would be thinking the same thing at the same time. Just on that, actually, and you mentioned before about sort of needing somewhere to live. Well, maybe I'll work through this next point. Just while we're firing up the calculator. We've just had a comment from Regis again, and there's some real great, terrific activity on the channel as well, just for those that are viewing in live. He just was saying it would be good if we could differentiate elements of the discussion between investment properties and buying a home as your primary residence, maybe with the view to the calculator going forward as well. So obviously,
absolutely.
I think we've often just looked at property as an investment class because we're an investment, we're an investment house that judges everything on its value in the investment realm. But obviously, people need somewhere to live. So
yeah, that's right. So I mean, there's And this is a hard part about how do you assess those, and we make an effort at it, and so you can see that you can sort of line them up and try and work that out. But the idea is, you got right around Australia. There's all you pick your state or whatever. So at the moment, it's sort of we spoke about Sydney houses.
I've got a scenario here actually, if you wanted to pop it in some numbers. I just thought, just so it's a bit relevant and just a bit of backstory to the I was just working on a figure of the house price being $700,000. Now you can choose to add in stamp duty to that or not. I'm not sure how that works in the calculator, but let's just say total cost $700,000, 21% deposit, of course, about $150,000, so lending of $550,000. Which breaks out roughly at 3% to $344 a week. So that was that rent versus buy thing, I think, where people were thinking, well, I'm in a house, it's worth $700,000, and I'm paying, $450 a week. I could probably own it cheaper. I just thought maybe we'd work that one into
So you just change those two. If when you pick different ones, it'll actually flick the rents for you to sort of show you what the rent is. But your rent there was actually pretty similar to this one. So what was it?
20... I had $344 a week, which is just basically 3% of $550K, but thereabouts. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Just use the $550 as a lending, as a borrowing if you wanted.
So
$16,500 a year.
We're going to pick a few different versions, but what we've tried to do is sort of say let's pre-can a few different economic conditions for you. So here's where we are at the moment: this low growth, inflation of 1.5%, wage growth of just under 2%, which is a bit above where we are now. But let's say we get back there. Rental growth of 1%, and mortgage rates basically stay where they are. So if that was the case, you then say, well, how do you want to forecast this? Pick a measure. So we've got this Sydney housing market there. You can sort of change where you think that's going to be. So in 20% to, if you think it's going to be, things going to be rising over time to 200, you're going back to 200%, then you say, oh, well, this is where I think this line's sort of headed.
Okay.
So now we're back to this, the 150% we spoke about on that thing. You say, well, is that going to stay at 150%? Is it headed to 200%? Is it headed down? You go, well, you might be particularly positive and go, it's going to head to 200%. And we'll go, well, if it's heading to 200%, then load up, because you're going to make a lot of money from your property investment.
Oh, yep. Okay.
You can sort of see, we've got two lines there. One, if you didn't use any debt, so just sort of give you a factor there. You can see, how much you put in, your entry costs are, what your rental amounts are, other costs. What we have is quite detailed parts, though. You can go in and play with these assumptions and get quite a good look at it, because some of those factors are saying might be providing things that you're not expecting. So you can go, first of all, we've got our economic assumptions you can play with. But the other thing is you can, and all the individual ones, but you can also look at what it does to some of the other ratios.
Yep.
And see how they sort of end up based on what you're doing. And you can change those, all your different landlords, body corporate fees. We've got sort of some ranges in there by saying, so that was what I was talking about before. Somewhere for a unit, somewhere between 0.3 and 1.2 typically.
Okay.
Of the value, but it's a broad range, and sort of various depends whether you've got
swimming pools
and elevators and all that type of stuff like that. Makes a huge difference.
Yep.
So it's then that rent versus buy then is very much comes back down to once you've got that, you can then sort of go in and say, let's have a look now on a rent versus buy. And sort of say, well, okay, well, if I put my deposit somewhere else, what can I get? And we've sort of said you can get a 0.2%. Return.
Okay.
Hopefully, you might be able to. That's assuming you're going to stick it in a term deposit. But if you think, I can get sort of a 5% return somewhere else. Say, it looks at that issue I was saying at the start, where even in this really strong property growth scenario, you're better off renting versus buying for your first year, because you just got to stick out a bunch of stamp duty and.
Yeah, of course.
You can lose it in this old Australia. And then the longer you have it, the more that's going to benefit you. And then the net effect of this one is, just given we're in a low growth environment, you're actually it's predisposed towards, because we've given that those low, it's predisposed towards renting versus buying because the property prices are so high.
Mm.
And so you're basically saying, can I get a valuation pickup? Can I get interest rates either to fall? I want people to pay more for it.
Just a quick question. So obviously they've got the, you've always got that big stamp duty hit at the start of the whole affordability piece.
Mm.
Is there any thought on adding in a stamp duty versus land tax calculator perhaps for the New South Welshman?
Absolutely. We've had a bit of a play with that. That'll come out in our next version of this. But I just want to give you the opposite one there. If you said, okay, well, what happens if these things go back to sort of say 120%?
Yep. Okay.
Is it then you're saying, well, now you're tanking on property you look at a buy versus rent on those ones. So the property, if you've got no debt, actually works out, it's not too bad. Like, mm-hmm. it's not, you lose a bit of money, but it's not the end of the world.
Sure.
But it's the gearing part where, without that gearing, that's what's really throwing you out. And then your rent versus buying is unequivocally better to rent, and just gets better and better year after year.
Yep.
So the other factors though come into it that I spoke about. You can play with those things about inflation, things about wage growth, and all those other factors.
Yep.
You can definitely come up with some property paradise where you go great wage from good wage growth in wages, interest rates get held low, and inflation stays relatively low.
Yep.
So if that's the case, property buying is comes into its own.
Yep.
And that's sort of what governments in a way are trying to target. Mm. In a way, like that's the central banks, an ideal scenario for central banks at the moment is decent size inflation, lots of wage inflation in particular.
Yep.
Oh, sorry, lots of wage inflation
pushing
CPI,
inflation.
not too high,
not too horrible. Yep.
And it really lets them get that and keep the interest rates really low and lets them get debt sort of swept out of the way for federal governments and for consumers.
Assuming that people are using that surplus wage to pay down debt as opposed to just go on double leveraging it somewhere else on another property.
Absolutely. Well, that is absolutely the problem right now, is that what governments are trying to do is keep interest rates low so that companies get out and spend it.
Yep.
Because and create new jobs and for growth purposes.
Yep.
They want new. That it's there to generate
new wealth.
Yeah.
Productive wealth, probably
not
a better way to put it.
It's not meant to be there for people to swap assets and just increase the price of those assets.
Yeah, sure.
But that's what's happening to it. So I think there's growing recognition in central banks that's a problem.
Yep.
They don't look like they're doing anything about it at the moment. But there's your other risk, is that you start finding that maybe 4 or 5 years' time, if situations don't change and we're all headed for Japan, is that that starts to get to the stage where they go, okay, well, now we do actually genuinely need to get house prices back down or at least just limit them so they can't go anywhere while we're trying to pump all this money into getting companies to get out and borrow.
And it just feels like, record low or very low, compared to historical interest rates makes a lot of sense for exactly that purpose. But then you need to have built out a number of other regulatory pieces to control the rapid asset speculation, like with macroprudential, and we had Leith on last week as well.
Yeah.
Saying the similar, without that macroprudential component in there stopping people from just going all in property. And Australians probably, we're one of the worst at it. It's
the second highest amount of debt.
It's essentially our second nature. Without controlling that, you're never going to get the primary objective out of the way, because you're just going to have ballooning debt.
So. Yeah, absolutely. We're a while away from that yet. My guess
from macroprudential, you think?
Well, and my guess as well, we're a while away from macroprudential that makes a big difference to these things. I think at the moment it's the macroprudential you'll see that will come on will be incremental. It'll be, okay, let's try this, and let's try a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more.
Something will start working, they'll be bleating, they'll roll it back.
It'll be over a course of years that, So I think there's, I trust the government to keep throwing money at asset markets and trying to keep interest rates as low as possible and really push up these, that the house price growth you see under that scenario is quite low.
Yep.
So it's actually quite difficult. So it's worth going through and playing with the calculator.
Okay.
It's difficult to come up with a scenario where you make a mozza out of it without assuming that, right, we're going to go to 200% and interest rates are going to stay really low.
Yeah, sure.
There's lots of scenarios where buying is better than renting, especially because interest rates are so low at the moment.
Servicing debt so cheap. Yep.
Yep. There's also lots of cases where it goes from it goes quite quickly from, I was just better, to I was actually a lot worse, because when you've got this debt overburden, debt can never make a good investment bad.
Yep.
But it can make like an investment that's a little bit on average, all of a sudden turn into a bad investment.
Yeah,
You're not earning quite enough to get over your debt, and all of a sudden there's this, and you've got this huge leverage effect, is that you're buying into something with an 80% leverage. You don't need a very small price fall, and you're cooked on it.
Yep. Okay.
So whereas if you bought it without leverage, you might have got to the end of the period and gone, maybe I should have rented, maybe I should have bought it, would have been about the same. But you go, I used a lot of leverage, and particularly when you're worried about your situation changing, is you going, okay, I bought this because I've got a, I've just got a new baby, and we really need a 2-bedroom house, and I've gone all in to get this, and then you're like, right, now I've got twins on the way. Okay, a two-bedroom house isn't going to cut it.
Yeah,
I need to go up again. And that's, you've just cooked, you know, a big amount of stamp duty and all those benefits we spoke about of renting versus buying are just out the window.
I've got a question here from Ben O'Reilly. Thanks, Ben, for your question. In your opinion, how far off are we from a voting public that has missed out on owning their own home and becoming a greater percentage of the population than homeowners? And I've got a couple of stats here. So if I recall rightly, about a month or so ago, maybe a little bit less, it was 60, low 60% home ownership in Australia, down from about 75 in the 70s, I think, in the happy days. Mm. So 60% home ownership, and it worked out to be 30% mortgage, 30% owned. So it was about a third. So a third renting, a third owning outright, and a third mortgage. So going back to Ben's question, what would you say? How far off are we from having a voting public that takes to the streets with the pitchforks because they feel that the home ownership is
a long way away.
Long way away.
Because I feel as if every time there'll be something to placate the masses. There's always something to.
You've got House of Mum and is it Bank of Mum and Dad as well? The cascading wealth.
Yeah. I get. Look, I'm not saying it's not a problem. I think it's a big problem. It's a big societal problem.
Yep.
But I guess I think there's a number of just intermediate measures you can put in place that mean that, I mean, we went to the last election saying maybe we should take away some of the massive benefits that investors get.
Yep.
And, oh my goodness, completely we can't possibly take away all these,
I bought that investment property to fund my kid's house.
Yeah, exactly. I bought this thing 20 years ago at $10,000, now it's worth $600,000, and I need the gearing on it because I'm offsetting that against this new bigger thing I just bought.
Yep.
So I think there's a I'd love that he was right and you do get a big groundswell. I just don't think it's I don't think it's happening.
I don't
think the average person understands enough or cares enough about it. They know it's a problem, but I think the only solution for the average person is I've got to get in. I've got to become
part of the winners, and get the wealth effect, the wealth halo. Mm. Another one from Matt. Is Australia suffering recency bias, a housing boom driven from China's massive trade with Australia and Asia Pacific, now not so much? So,
look, I mean, the big benefit with China, the China trade, is really that it helps the Australian budget. Mm-hmm. In particular, the iron ore stuff, and it's helping us at the moment. Absolutely, it's a huge tailwind for us.
But does that matter so much now that we've got both sides of the government that are happy with deficits and surplus budgets seem to be a thing of the past? Do you think?
No, that's right. Yeah, it doesn't matter as much. Yes and no, I suppose. I guess in the end, if there's lots of money sitting in the till, then and governments need to try and work out who am I going to give this. I've got this extra money, I don't know who to give it to.
Yep. And I've got to have a deficit budget this year opposed to a surplus.
Yeah, and partly they do at the moment.
Yeah, that's right.
Going, well, who can I get it out to? I suppose I can give it to homeowners. They seem to like to vote for parties that help them. So, I think there's more votes in helping homeowners and helping renters because, there are more homeowners at the moment, but there's also most renters want to be homeowners at some stage. And so they don't look at it.
If there's
something that's benefiting a homeowner, and often it's not directly saying, well, because it's benefiting them, it must be detrimenting you.
Yep.
People don't put that two and two together.
Yeah, sure.
And so.
Yep. Okay. All right. Very good. No, thanks for that. We're about done for, I think we've come pretty close to time.
Yeah.
Good show. Quick shout out to everybody who's in those questions, but also of course to how can people have a look at this property calculator that we're utilizing live at the back end of the show. Put a huge amount of work into it, Damien. So
absolutely. Yeah. NewcastWealth.com/property calculator. Love to, have your feedback and anything you want added. So yeah, that. Doing that comparison for New South Wales people about what does it end up costing you?
Yeah,
and a lot of that really does come back to that whole cost of money type issue. But it's certainly, I guess what I'd say is as a general rule on it is by taking the by taking it as a payment over time,
mm-hmm.
you are lowering your risk in terms of the outcomes, because you haven't sort of gone, you haven't put as much money up front on it, and you sort of spaced it out so that if circumstances do change and something happens and you want to change, it's nowhere near as damaging for you. And that's why it would be a great policy to have right throughout.
Yeah, well, and obviously the proponents of land tax, and we've had quite a few of them on the show over the years, I think, you know, just being able to, is it portability? What's the term they use? Well, you're able to move around anyway. So, you're not constantly coughing up 50 grand to change your digs. I think makes a lot of sense. A lot of sense.
You get a job. You know, in a different suburb, and you just go, "Oh well, I'll sit in traffic for an hour a day rather than moving suburbs." And
yeah, that's right. You get hemmed in. I think there's quite a lot in that. Looking forward to seeing that capability in the property calculator as well. I reckon we'll get quite a lot of interest if we can be first to market on that one. Thanks. Oh, of course, yeah, and I'll link in the description as well for those that are watching on YouTube or on the podcast. Just head over to the show notes and we'll pop a link in there for you as well. Thanks, Damien. Great show. Terrific stuff. We'll jump across to our coming up next week. So we've got next week we have another special guest. We will double check on whether or not he's having a child a couple of days prior. But of course, he is a very special guest and friend of the show, Gareth Aird. He's currently head of Australian Economics for the Commonwealth Bank. And he's joining us along with our own chief economist, Leith Van Onselen, for a big show on the world of economics. He's coming in actually to give us the latest updates on the Australian economy and the state of the housing market from his viewpoint at Australia's biggest bank. He always has some terrific insights, often formed from the very high quality data that he has access to at the bank. So put that one in the diary. It promises to be a ripper. So tune in next week. It's Thursday, the 22nd of July, 12:30 p.m. For what does promise to provide some terrific inside intelligence from a big name at one of the four pillars of Australian finance. Thanks to all of those that have watched in live and for another great episode, and to all those that have asked questions and stuck with us through a little couple of tech foibles there as well. Viewer question of the week. Sorry, yeah, we can do that one as well. Sorry, we'll jump across the viewer question of the week. Are you planning on renting or buying? And if so, where? And I would suggest if you are looking at that one to head over to our property calculator and just run the numbers as well. It'd be interesting to see, get your feedback from that terrific system. For all of those, if you haven't already, feel free to click like on the video to give us some feedback. And if you'd like to see more of our content, head over to nucleuswealth.com/content. To stay up to date on news from us, follow us on social media. And finally, if you know anyone who'd get something out of today's episode, let them know about it, share with a friend, and help our show grow. Thanks again for tuning in from myself, Tim Fuller, and the team. And we look forward to catching you at the next one. Cheers.